Ataha. Therefore, tat that. Apavada artam. To counteract. Bhaja. Engage in devotional service. Sarva atmana. With all your senses. Harim. Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pachan. Seen. Tat. Of the Lord. Atmakam. Under the control. Vishwam. The cosmic manifestation. Stiti. Maintenance. Utpati. Creation. Apyayaha. And annihilation. Yataha. From whom? Translation. You should always know that this cosmic manifestation is created, maintained, and annihilated by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, everything within this cosmic manifestation is under the control of the Lord. To be enlightened by this perfect knowledge, one should always engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Self-realization, understanding oneself as Brahman or spirit soul, is very difficult in the material condition. However, if we accept the devotional service of the Lord will gradually reveal Himself. In this way, the progressive devotee will gradually realize his spiritual position. We cannot see anything but the darkness. We cannot see anything in the darkness of night, not even our own selves. But when there is sunshine, we can not only see the sun, but everything within the world as well. Lord Krishna explains in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, first verse, Maya Shaktamana Parta Yogam Yunjan Madashrayaha Asam Shayan Samagrambam Yathagya Shisi Tatshrinu. Now hear, O son of Pitta Arjuna, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. When we engage ourselves in the devotional service of the Lord to become Krishna conscious, we understand not only Krishna, but everything related to Krishna. In other words, through Krishna consciousness, we can understand not only Krishna and the cosmic manifestation, but also our constitutional position. In Krishna consciousness, we can understand that the entire material creation is created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, maintained by Him, annihilated by Him, and absorbed in Him. We are also part and parcel of the Lord. Everything is under the control of the Lord, and therefore our only duty is to surrender unto the Supreme and engage in His transcendental loving service. So,
Atastadapavadartam Vajasarvatmanahadim Pashyamstadatmakam Vishwam Stit Yutpat Yap Yayayataha.
So Om Maganat Vidanda Shah Granjana Shvakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigarave Namaha. So Prabhupada is indirectly making reference to this very interesting verse in the Vedic literatures, which states Yasmin Vigate Sarvameva Migatam Bhavati. Does anyone know what that means? No. That's good. So got something new for you. So that means one who knows Krishna knows everything. Now that's an interesting statement. Does that mean that a pure devotee of the Lord necessarily knows how to fix a car? Or how to fix this light that went off? You know, sometimes something wrong happens in the temple, like the electricity goes off, and they say, oh, Guru Maharaj, please fix it for us. Or maybe I do know how to fix it, but that's a separate subject matter. So what? How do we deal with this contradiction where it says that one who knows Krishna knows everything, and at the same time, we obviously see that pure devotees, sometimes, you know, if they're driving a car, sometimes they'll make the wrong turn or something like that. Does that mean they're not pure devotees? Because they turn left instead of right, or they don't know how to fix the chandelier, or what else don't they know? How to work the computer. Just like the other day, my computer blooped from the Krishna consciousness movement. That's what does that mean? It fell into Maya, and it didn't work. So I didn't really know what was wrong with it. And so does that mean that's any statement on my qualification? Because if I was actually a pure devotee, I would be able to analyze, know what transistor, what IC was wrong, and immediately fix it. So obviously I'm not qualified because I don't know how to do it. Well, I'll tell you what that statement means so we don't become bewildered when we see a pure devotee making the left turn as when he should make a right turn or whatever, you know, some what we would consider to be a material mistake. This also involves something called hermeneutics, but maybe I'll get a chance to talk about that. So anyway, so you have to be able, when knowing everything, you have to be able to differentiate between the what we call the hows and the whys. That appears bewildering, that statement. I'll give you an example. Let's say you're a little child, and you look in the sky. This morning we were looking in the sky, and what color is the sky generally? Besides all the little fancy colors around the clouds, what color? It's blue. Okay. So the little child asks his father what? Not what color is the sky. Why is the sky blue? So why is the sky blue? And the father answers, it is due, he's a scientist, Mr. Scientist, it is due to the refraction of the light, just like if you have a crystal. You have these crystal chandeliers here. If you were to take one of these crystals off the chandelier and you were to shine some light through it, you would get a whole spectrum of light, right? A rainbow. You get a rainbow. I used to do that with my mother's chandeliers. She didn't like that very much because they were very expensive, what they call Austrian crystal. So I would take it off and I would go through life, just looking at the life. Everything was so interesting. Everybody was multicolored. So anyway, so the explanation your father would give was because it's the refraction of the light. It's originally white light. It's reflected into various colors of the spectrum. And then what's refracting it is the atmosphere. The Earth is covered with different layers of, let's say, the stratosphere, the ionosphere. You can go into a whole scientific explanation. A pure devotee may not know that. You like, if you ask Gurudev, what's the ionosphere? And he says, well, is that part of my computer? He may not know that. But the father is not really answering the question. Because the child asked why. He didn't ask how. You understand the difference? That's really an interesting point we need to make with people. All the scientists can explain is how it happens, at least the immediate causes. Not even how in terms of the ultimate cause, you know, sarva karana karanam, as we find described in the Brahma Samhita. Ishwara Paramakrishna Satyananda Vigraha Anada Anadi Radir Govinda Sarva Karna Karnam. So all he can answer is the how question, the immediate how question. But why is the sky blue? We can answer that because it's a reflection of the Brahma Jyoti. I mean, that's what Prabhupada said. So sometimes devotees get bewildered when they hear the scientific description contrasted with Prabhupada's description, isn't it? They say, reflection of the Brahma Jyoti. No, this is a primitive culture, actually. It's because of the refraction. But both things are right. But you have to be able to distinguish how from why. So Krishna is refracting, because all the light in this universe originally comes from the Brahma Jyoti. It's the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is all the energy of the Lord. Like they say, the scientists say, you know, matter and energy are interchangeable. They're all energy, actually. If one studies atomic physics, nowadays you'll understand that even this chair that I'm sitting on or this table, whatever, is all energy. It appears to be static or just not moving, but it's all not even solid. Like if you were, scientifically, if you were to compress all matter, you know, all matter and take away all the empty space in the, you know, the electron and the molecule and everything like that, you probably, the Earth would compress the size of a pinhead or less. It'd be a pretty heavy pinhead. It would have the same gravity as the Earth. I mean, that's a scientific explanation. So it's all energy. It's all energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, yes, the sky is blue because of the reflection of the Brahma Jyoti. Also, Krishna arranges that the cloud is the same color as he is, so we can become ecstatic when seeing him. So everything is arranged by the Supreme Lord. That's in philosophy, that's called teleology, to understand the purpose of everything, the why question. There's different branches of philosophy. There's ontology, which means, you know, what do things consist of? What is your nature? Like we say, the ontological position of the soul is Satchitananda, right? He's eternal, he's never born, Ajayate, Mriyate, Bhakadachan. These are all ontological descriptions. A devotee should learn these words. Why? Because we're meant to preach Krishna consciousness. I mean, maybe not to the villagers, we don't use these words. It's not that we go to a village in Fiji and say, you know, some small village, and say, the ontological position. When you understand the teleology of the situation, then they'll say, this guy's crazy. But at least Prabhupada wanted us to preach to the intellectual class of persons, especially at the university. So the devotees should, like you read Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's writings, it's very intellectual. And he attracted a lot of intelligent people. So we're meant to preach, Prabhupada said we're meant to preach to the intelligent class of men. To everybody, but the intelligent class of men, because they're the leaders of society. So getting back to the point, so teleology means the purpose. So a devotee knows the purpose of everything, right? If I see this microphone, I may not know how it's constructed, but I know why, what it's meant for. It's meant to glorify, utilize to glorify Krishna, right? So that's the answer to the how and why dilemma. It's very interesting. So anyway, that's teleology means the why, and ontology basic means, you know, what it's constituted of. And there's other branches of philosophy we don't need to talk about, like metaphysics, which goes beyond the normal empirical realm. Empirical means things you can measure with different instruments. So this is very important point. So let's talk about another subject matter I mentioned at the beginning of class, which is hermeneutics, because this is actually very important too. Because hermeneutics, that's a big word, means how do you understand the words of Shastra and the words of the spiritual master, doesn't it? Everybody's heard of that word before? No. No. It's another big word you can throw out to impress your friends so they think you're intelligent. So it means how do you understand the words, let's say, of Srila Prabhupada without getting bewildered and thinking that Prabhupada is wrong in a particular juncture because he said turn right instead of left or something like that. So you have to understand Prabhupada through the lens or through the glasses or lens or however you may put it of Shastra. The pure devotee has to be understood through Shastra. We cannot think, for example, that the pure devotee of the Lord is exactly the same as God. There was one Gaudiya Math organization that was going around and saying that, you know, Prabhupada is omniscient like Krishna is omniscient. Isn't it? You understand? And therefore, our guru must be omniscient too. Because therefore, he knows whatever he does, he knows all things past, present, and future. But that's not really the position of the pure devotee. The pure devotee is omniscient because he knows Krishna and the purpose of everything past, present, and future. But he doesn't know all the details unless Krishna tells him the details. You know, so it appears like the pure devotee, like Srila Prabhupada, tries different preaching programs. Some of them work, some of them didn't. Like Prabhupada went to Jhansi, right? You know that story? Prabhupada went to Jhansi, and he tried to establish a center there. There was a whole big property that Prabhupada was given to utilize. But then that property was taken away by the governor, Governor Munshi, and his wife, who turned it into a lady bhavan. You understand what I mean? So then Prabhupada was just, all of a sudden, he was bereft of everything. And Prabhupada had to come back to Delhi, and we all know the rest of the story. So it's not that Prabhupada, at that point, knew, or even before he started the Jhansi Bhavan, that it was going to be a failure. But he was submissive to Krishna's will. He saw Krishna behind everything. And therefore, when the Jhansi Bhavan fell apart, he didn't get discouraged or depressed. I mean, sometimes we do things and it's not successful. I mean, many things, I mean, just like I mentioned even the other day, my computer broke down and I got discouraged, depressed, and everything. Not really, but I'm just using an example. So I didn't see Krishna's hand behind the computer. You know, Krishna's everywhere. He's in every atom. He's in every microcircuit, right? So you know, we forget that. So why did it break down? Okay. So why did it break down? I understood later on that day why it broke down, because he went to visit one man who we can engage to give another computer. But Krishna wanted to engage him, and he also promised a donation to pay for the feast tonight. So Krishna had some purpose in that. So that, therefore, even though I didn't understand why the computer broke down, ultimately I understood why, after a few hours, why Krishna arranged it. So the point is that if we have that faith that God is controlling everything, then we will understand why everything happens. And then we can answer the question of another branch of philosophy. This is another big word for you, which is called theodicy. Nobody's taking notes. So you're not going to remember any of this stuff. So theodicy basically means the justice of God. That's another branch of philosophy. Theodicy means the justice of God. And this is a main topic that's being discussed nowadays in theological circles. Which means, to put it plainly, is why do bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people? That's the question people raise. Some people answer it not knowing teleology. I'm throwing out words so you'll start to remember them again. Not knowing the purpose of God or the whys. How do they answer it? They say, well, God lost control of everything. You know, it's like either your president or your prime minister throws the first ball of the soccer season do they do that here? But he's not responsible for who wins or loses. It's not that, let's say your Fiji team, it lost. Your rugby team lost in New Zealand, right? Right? Am I right or wrong? You lost badly. I mean, it was an embarrassment. I didn't even want to tell people I was going to Fiji the next day. They asked me where I was going. I said, well, I was going to South Africa. Because they won, right? But it's not that you blame the prime minister, right? You know. Okay, sometimes I get blamed if I bless, you know, so you bless our team to win, you know. Okay, you're blessing. And then the team doesn't win. Oh, Maharaj, it's his fault. He didn't bless enough. You know, people before they... It's interesting, people before they take exams in university always come for my blessings. And then if they don't do well, then it's my fault. And if they do well, you know, I get the credit. So, but it's not like that. You still have to study, you idiot. It's not that you just like, you just sleep all day and night and you get blessings and you do well on the exam. Still have to, you know, man proposes, God disposes. So,
So getting back to the point, so people think that God is like that. He sort of starts the ball rolling. It's called the prime mover philosophy. That's it. It's from in Greek. It was Aristotle. Anyway, he kicks the ball off, and then whatever happens, he doesn't control anymore. He's just there. In other words, God is... Here's another fancy word. Boy, I'm using too many fancy words. God is immanent. Immanent means he's in the spiritual world. That's dualism. Now, we'll relate that to Indian philosophy, too. It's like extreme dualism, like Madhvacharya taught. God is in the spiritual world, but, you know, he starts everything in the material world, but whatever happens here is your doings. So that's extreme dualism. So it's interesting. It's interesting because that's the Tattvavada philosophy, too. So in other words, if something happens here, you're suffering, don't blame God. You know, it's either happening by chance, or it's happening because you got bad karma, or it's happening because you've made the wrong enemies. Anyway, somehow or other, it's happening. You know, everything's by chance, you know, probability. Like that you got sick, just like this famous person, Jobs, he just got sick. He had cancer, pancreatic cancer, and he just died. You know, the head of Apple Computer, you heard of him? So God is really out of the picture. Even if you believe in God, he's out of the picture. He's a good guy. He means well, but he's so busy in the spiritual world or doing whatever he's doing. I guess, of course, they don't talk about him dancing with Radharani, but he's so busy, you know, he can't really multitask that well. You know what multitasking is? It means do two things at one time. You know, his mind is absorbed, so you just do whatever you're going to do in the material world. So that's extreme dualism. And that's one explanation under the heading of theodicy, you know, the justice of God. And there's other explanations, too. Some of them say that, you know, God just like is punishing you because you haven't surrendered to the Lord Jesus yet. And in America, this is particularly popular, that when people actually talk about how by surrendering to God, you're going to become rich, you're going to become famous, you're going to become powerful. This is going to be the goal of, you know, heaven on earth, so to speak. There is no heaven on earth. It just doesn't occur. So these are different methods that people take. Another method is people just say, there's no God. You know, bad things happen to good people, good things happen to bad people. And because there's no God, he just doesn't exist. So there's different explanations under the heading of theodicy as to why bad things happen to good people. But if we understand, get back to the word teleology, the purpose of the why question, then we can always understand why things happen in this world. Why? To bring us closer to Krishna. That's it. Whatever happens to you is to help you learn the lessons of life so you can come closer to Krishna. The reason you're getting old and your bones are creaking and your eyesight is failing and your teeth are falling out, like Duryodhana was told, not Duryodhana, but just Dhritarashtra was told this by Vidura, that, you know, your teeth are falling out, you were blind from birth, time to head for the hills. So the reason that's happened is to teach you the lesson. That's why everything happens to you. There's the why question. To teach you the lesson that you can enjoy in this material world, your eternal servant of Krishna, and your real position is with Krishna. So you understand that, you understand everything. But we forget it. I mean, how much faith do we actually have in Krishna? How much do we actually understand that Vasudeva Sarvamiti, that Krishna is everything through his energy? He's control of everything. He's aware of everything, omniscient, omnipresent. Do we actually believe that? I mean, Prabhupada asks the devotee, he says, which among you actually believe that Krishna is God? If we did, we would be acting a lot differently than we're acting now. At least we'd be afraid of him. Right? We'd have some fear of God, if not some love of God. we'd be rising early, chanting our rounds. I mean, do you actually believe that Krishna's there in his holy names? If you did, you wouldn't be inattentive. If you had full faith, we're talking about full faith. Yasya bhakti para bhakti, isn't it? One has faith in Krishna, faith in the Vedic literatures, faith in the spiritual master, everything's revealed. So if you had full faith, you wouldn't be chanting inattentive rounds. Like if I take a knife and put it to your throat, you have full faith that you're going to die if I push that knife in your throat, right? And you're going to be very attentive at that particular juncture. It's not that you're going to space out, go to sleep. Is it? I mean, you go like this. Okay, give me your money, Sumuk. And you go. Is that going to happen? Or you're not going to be thinking, let me take some prasadam first. I'm hungry. You're not going to be thinking about, or who won the soccer game. Right? You're not going to be thinking about that, or the Bollywood movie you were supposed to see tonight. Because you know that death is there. You feel the sharp point right here in the Adam's apple. Of course, you go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And you give the person all of your money. Obviously. You don't hold back. So in the same way, because you have faith, you know it's there. It's tangible. So if you have faith in Krishna and the why and the holy names, there's no question of inattention when chanting or Bhagavatam class or sadhana, any of your aspects of sadhana. Then you make advancement. It's all based on the faith in the why question. Why is everything happening? Why is the sky blue? Why is everything happening? Why are people suffering? But we don't have that faith. How do you develop that faith? I just want to end with that note. How do you develop that faith? You associate with people who do have that faith. And that means hearing. Not necessarily physical association, but hearing, reading Srila Prabhupada's words. That's why we emphasize Srila Prabhupada's words, Srila Prabhupada's kirtans, because we already have the bhakti latabish, but the bhakti shakti is there. The saffron dust particles, the lotus feet of the Lord, are within the sound vibration coming from the lips of the pure devotee. So then you get that faith. You know, Prabhupada is giving you that faith. It's by the association you're getting that faith. So that's, and then when you have that faith, then you're enthusiastic. All these things. Utsahan, nishya, darya, tatat, karma, vartanat. Isn't it? Sangas, chagas, satovriti. All these things come from that faith. Faith in the philosophy, faith in the spiritual master, faith in the understanding about the modes of nature, faith in the eternality of the soul. That's all the answers. That's all the why stuff. The hows are not that important. Like Prabhupada said, talking about hows, like Prabhupada talked about technologists. Prabhupada was very much down on technologists. It's interesting. Because Prabhupada said, giving the example of Henry Ford, who Henry Ford was? He was the one who invented, not the automobile, but mass production. And he was a very wealthy man, in charge of big business, and in charge of many technologists. And so people one time, they were blaspheming him. I don't know what it's called, blasphemy, but libeling or... anyway, they were criticizing him. Because blasphemy is in regard to a devotee. They were criticizing him that he never went to the university, didn't learn anything. And there was some court case, and he said to the judge, you see all these buttons here on my desk? He said, if I push one, a technologist comes running. And he answers any questions I have. And also you have, let me talk about Steve Jobs for a second, in memorial. You know, we have our festival today in his honor. So, talking about him, he left university, but he knew which technologists to hire. You know, there was one called Wozniak or something like that. So he hired technologists to do all the... He was good in the concept, but he hired the technologists to do all the, you know, the stuff, the wiring, you know, how to do program, integrated circuits, and all that other stuff. And he was successful. So, in other words... It is not so important to know the how answers, but to know the why answer and to be completely convinced why things are happening and that Krishna is in charge. So this is what this verse and purport about. So any questions or comments about these things?
Do you want to speak on climate change in the universe? Do you want to speak on climate change in the universe or something? I don't know
really. They speak on what?
Climate change.
Climate change, yeah.
That should be after the conference. What do you want to do?
Climate change? I'm not an expert on climate change. It's a relative thing. It's better I speak on consciousness change. You know, we have a lecture on. And we'll talk about it. You have to liaise with my chumcha. You know, go cool. See him. He's in charge. I actually work for ISKCON here. So you have to talk to the authorities. So, anyway, because I have a full schedule when I come back, so I have to really be conscious, because I'm also with GBC, so I have to deal with things. So, consciousness change. I mean, climate change, you'll find people saying, yes, it's happening, no, it's happening. I'm not going to get into the relative truths like that. But we're into, you know, anyway. I'm not going to say what my opinion is about climate change in Bhagavatam class. I know. But if we understand Bhaktaram Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, that Krishna is the enjoyer, and we do things for his enjoyment and understand this world belongs to him, we'll take better care of the world, we won't engage in all these activities that are polluting the world and even disturbing the balance of the world. Like Prabhupada talked about Haranyaksha. Haranyaksha disturbed, he was talking about how people were disturbing, like Haranyaksha disturbing the balance of the earth, and then the earth went down into the Garbhadak ocean. So when you deal with Bhumi in a way that's disrespectful, extremely disrespectful, we're basically raping Mother Earth. I mean, that's basically what we're doing. Like to get the oil nowadays, they're not only drilling down, but they have these places in Canada and other places where they scrape off the earth, and then they use, what is it, natural gas to boil off parts of the earth so they get the oil from it, and it's extremely polluting. Even in our New Vrindavan, the devotees sold the gas leases around New Vrindavan, and they use this process called fracking. You've heard about this before? Where they actually go like horizontally and vertically into the earth and blow, you know, just have explosions, and then it creates a mixture between the where you have the water table and all the polluting substances, and they inject polluting substances into the earth, and so your water becomes carcinogenic. So, I mean, there's many things I know. It's not that I'm completely ignorant about these things. However, it's better I talk about change of consciousness and treating the earth with respect, because the earth, there's this hypothesis, some scientists have this hypothesis, it's called the Gaia hypothesis. Anyone's heard of this before? That means the earth is a living entity. Just like you have on the microcosmic scale, you have us, you know, living entities, and we have a body and we have a circulatory system. And the earth is also a living entity, and we also believe that, in the Bhumi, or Bhudevi.
A macrocosm.
A macrocosm, yeah. So that the earth actually responds, the earth has an immune system, like we have an immune system, and we're the germs. The earth wants to get rid of at this point. If we're not Krishna conscious. If we're Krishna conscious, then there'll be so much wealth and things on this earth for us to enjoy, or vegetables and fruits and all those things. But if we're not, we're like a foreign invader, and the earth's immune system, you know, the earthquakes and the other things like that, will eventually wipe the human race out. I mean, that's one tact you can take. But in any case, I'd rather talk about change of consciousness and faith in Krishna. Okay, is any other questions? Yes. Yeah, Guru Parampara, and even there is material technology, even they have technology as far as the hows are concerned, with different mantras and Ayurveda. That's many different aspects of the Vedas are dedicated to to house as well as the why. You have the Atharva Veda, for example, and there's many different mantras in the Atharva Veda for killing your enemies or, you know, cursing people. It's interesting. Yantra is like one of the symbols that make everything auspicious or curse people. And tantra, basically the word means to connect. Tanmatra. It means to connect. People have a misunderstanding of the word tantra. They think it means black magic. But there's Vaishnava tantra, or tantra in the mode of goodness, and there's also the left-handed tantra. Left-handed means the tantric people who eat meat, they have illicit sex, they drink liquor or kava. That's left-handed tantra. So there's left-handed tantra and right-handed tantra. Like Narada Pancharatra is a tantric book. And right-handed, you know, Krishna conscious tantra. Does anyone else have a question? We're getting a little technical and we're dealing with subject matters that have nothing to do with the verse of purport. Yeah. Yeah, a Mahavishnu. That's why it's blue. And that's the why. And even insofar as the how is concerned, it's a very subtle explanation. But we're not denying the scientist's explanation either. So the Krishna conscious explanation does not necessarily contradict the scientific explanation. Because I've seen a lot of devotees experience doubts when they see a particular explanation in the Bhagavatam, and then they see what the scientists explain, and they're just like all bewildered. And sometimes they actually leave Krishna consciousness because of that. So we have to really distinguish between the hows and the whys, and also even the more subtle hows, how things happen in a more subtle plane. So it's, in other words, oftentimes we think there's a contradiction, but there's not a contradiction. And my godbrother, who passed away, Sataputta Prabhu, was expert in explaining, reconciling the two points of view. If you read some of his cosmological books, you'll see he actually reconciles the Vedic understanding, at least the ratios of the planets or the distances of the planets, with what the scientists understand. And even he reconciles what Prabhupada said about how far the moon is from the earth, in relationship to how far the sun is from the earth. Because Prabhupada makes the statement that the moon is further away than the sun. So that bewilders many devotees, because even if you do some triangulation from the earth, you'll see that in absolute distance, the sun is further away. Well, how far is the sun? 9 million miles or something? What? 93 million miles away. And the moon is how far away? Little, it's less, much less. So how do you reconcile those two? You reconcile, Sataputta was very expert in understanding that the Vedas refer to distance from what's called the ecliptic plane. Now we're getting a little technical. Does anyone know what the ecliptic plane is? You know what it is? What? Yeah, that's the plane where the earth goes around the sun. And so obviously the moon is further away from the ecliptic plane than the sun is. Yeah, we're talking about heliocentric. And also the Vedas present both of those concepts. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur presented the heliocentric concept. So, but it doesn't matter, it's all relative motion. I'm sure I'm bewildering all the devotees here who don't have any scientific background. It's not really my intention. So it's all relative motion. So you can explain motion in terms of heliocentric and geocentric and still have the same thing going on. It doesn't necessarily have to contradict each other. However, I'm getting to the point that Sataputta Prabhu, he was able to reconcile this contradiction between Prabhupada's explanation and what the scientists see. So we should have faith in the explanation of the Vedic literatures and not be confused by scientific explanation. It's really not important. The hows are not that important. Just like if I say to you, for example, let's say you came here in the morning from Mangalarti. I say, why did you come here? And you answer in a how way. Well, I took a bus. I said, that's not important. I don't care how you got here. Why did you come here? And they said, well, to go to Mangalarti. I said, oh, that's good. You understand? So the how questions are not that important. Any technologist can, you know, analyze those things. We can hire them. We can hire an architect. We can hire an electrician to fix the lights over there, right? You know, of course, if Dwarka can fix it, it's better. You save money. But if you can't, we hire someone. Madurang, he has all the money, so there's no problem. He's Kuvera. Kuvera Raj. They change. Yes, they change. No, we don't accept that as absolute. That is true. The scientific opinions do change. But there are certain things you can see, distances, by measuring, by triangulation, and things like that. There's certain principles that haven't changed. And so we shouldn't get bewildered when one thing contradicts another thing. And have faith that the Vedic literatures are describing the whys, which is much more important than the hows.
Scientists, they keep sticking to theories and they don't have anything practical.
Yeah.
That's why it's not better.
Yes. They change, but there's certain things, you know, they do know, like they can triangulate things, you know, like A squared plus B squared equals C squared, you know, the Pythagorean theory. I mean, that's something Prabhupada accepted too, so. And, you know, there's certain things the scientists, I mean, that everybody knows, right? I mean, just practical things. So, but we don't consider that to be absolute knowledge, even that, because we're interested in the why question. You know, why do things happen? Why is this happening to me? That was the point I was making in class. Okay, why are we going to greet the deities?
Yeah.
Jai.